This is the BCA Podcast, the outreach arm of Beards Creek Adventures, and your weekly source for all things faith, family, and stewardship. We're your hosts, Charlie and Mike Culkin. Join us each week for interviews, discussions, laughs, and encouragement. We hope you guys enjoy the show. Welcome back to BCA Podcast, folks. I'm just me and Dad for this one. And let's see if we can find something to talk about.
Yeah, let's see. What could we possibly come up with? It's been 2 weeks, I think, since we've done a podcast
together. At least two since we've done one.
Yeah, because we were going to do one last week between Tim Brick, who talked about micro farming, which was, to me, was fascinating. Like, the idea of really getting as much bang for your buck out of your garden as possible. And before that was Uncle Dave the fly fishing. So you and I we were going to do one last week, right, but somebody fell asleep at 8:30.
Somebody also worked 52 hours that week and was getting up the next morning to help you cut trees.
Did you get up to help me cut? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did.
Well, by help you cut trees, I mean I brought somebody to cut the trees.
That's right, and you're welcome to bring him back more and more.
He was going to today, and then instead, I guess, or tomorrow, and then instead we're going to go cut trees at his place, at his parents' place.
Yeah, so I don't know if we've updated recently, but I liked, you know, I hadn't realized we've been doing these cuts, and they're basically strip cuts.
Yeah.
Yep. And so if you're following at home, what we have is a north-south gas cut that we plant in a food plot. And then east and west, we have cut some, it's now three strips really in there that, you know, and they're not, they're probably 20, well, maybe 40 yards deep into the woods. And we clear cut basically with some islands of trees. And the idea is to foster more woody browse, shrubs, flowering shrubs, that kind of thing.
Yep.
To provide, you know, for cover for turkey, but also for deer browse, that kind of thing.
Right.
So things like spice bush and nanny berry and some of the other stuff that's back there. Seems to be a lot of beech. I've treated a lot of beech, but so we are doing another one of those strip cuts. So it's on a 3-year cycle. We did one 3 years ago, then we did one last year, and then we're doing the one this year. So really, it's probably a 5-year cycle.
Yeah,
but you brought one of your guys from work out to.
Yeah, he outside the two trees or so that he's done on his own. At his home with his dad, and that's about the experience that he had. And he's going to, in a couple of weeks, going in for our formal training with work, and but I want to get a saw in his hand, and I know he's been itching. You know, being on the tree crew and only being able to drag brush is brutal. So it was the worst job of all. It really is. And it's dragging brush is worse. When I was starting and just kind of learning on the tree crew, I at least got to stand next to the guy and like untie ropes and stuff and see that. No, he doesn't get to do that.
There's no rigging.
Sometimes there will be on occasion, but not since he's been here. He's been here, it's just been pruning and uplifting by the roadways.
Yeah.
So we got him out here, let him do a little bit of limbing and bucking and kind of get a feel for that. And he's learning that kind of healthy respect for saw. And he already had that, you know, where he did some contracting previously. So just any kind of saw. So that's always nice to see. And as much as it's a pain to have to train people up and deal with, okay, they need a single tree cut and I have to go out of my way to go over and do it because he's not certified yet. It's a bit of a pain, but I know long term, I'd rather have somebody trained the right way and trained the way that I want it and the way that I feel comfortable having it trained than hiring somebody fresh from, you know, some other company who knows how they were trained, what they know or what practices that they were taught that they really shouldn't have been taught.
Yeah.
You know.
So what does it take to get certified?
Depends on who you ask.
Well, I'm asking you.
So there's a couple of different ratings. So most people There's Game of Logging, which came from some Swiss guy, where there's a lot of Sawyer stuff that comes from Swiss. A lot of the higher end, like the Protoss mm-hmm. helmets and all that, the Avance, all that stuff is out from that direction. I don't know what's up with that.
Female Lumberjack on Instagram is from over there somewheres.
Mm.
I don't know if she's Swiss. Well, you follow her.
Do I?
I think so. I know we've talked about stuff that she
does. Yeah, maybe I do. Maybe I do. I know I follow the girl that does the carvings. She does log carvings and like reviews
the chainsaws. This is not a carving. This is one who competes.
Oh.
So,
yeah, whatever. Oh, maybe I do. Anyway. So there's a guy over there, and I'm not going to remember his name, but he created Game of Logging. And there's three classes to that, 1, 2, and 3. And it's kind of like the basic bucking and limbing and basic felling is 1. 2 then is like the directional felling of we're going to use wedges, we're going to steer this tree. And then the third level is going to be like hazard removals or storm damage, that kind of thing. You have a tree that fell on a house or whatever. There's added risks and dangers there.
Yeah.
So that's what Game of Logging's tiers are. And depending on where you are, that might be all that's required. For a long time, at least New York State, that's what was required to be able to cut was you had to have Game of Logging. Recently, we've kind of changed to adopt a USDA fire service, what they use. U.S. Department of Agriculture, which I don't know why they're in charge of that, but they are. So the Forest Service, essentially what they use. But then we hybridized it and kind of added our own / took away because we didn't need the fire aspects because we're not cutting on fire lines or anything like that. We took out the cross cut and like the axe felling. I got that at Ranger School, which is nice because there's a couple of parks in New York and there's a lot out west where you're not allowed to run power saws.
Right.
So there's additional trainings for that kind of thing. But as far as New York's concerned, it's either Game of Logging or it's our USDA.
Can you run battery operated?
Yeah, I was actually just asked if I'd be willing to try one out and run it, and I was like, I mean, if you're paying for it, I'll try it. And it's just a top handle,
yeah.
Which, as far as I'm concerned, it means I don't have to start it constantly because that is a little annoying. And as long as it if it's got the torque and the power to be able to cut what I'm cutting, just like I would with the gas, I got no problem with it.
Yeah.
I'll plug the batteries in. And we're state workers, so it's not like we're working real long 10-hour days constantly cutting. I mean, I could probably get one battery to last
me. See, that's where I go instantly is like, okay, it's springtime. We're not in full shape. We'll work 4 or 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
But in the summer, I'll run a saw 8 hours plus.
Yeah.
Well, a battery operated saw, and I just
so that's when you buy their other battery, which is another couple $100s.
Yeah, and if you ever look at like the nickel pools, they're so toxic. The birds land on them. They're dead in an hour. Literally dead in an hour.
Yeah.
But
you should see where they're sourcing that nickel from.
Yeah, they're using rainforest slave labor and everything else. Yeah. But go ahead, care about your environment.
Right. So yeah, that's kind of the trainings. It really depends on where you're at, what you're doing. Tri-State didn't care. They asked, they were like, oh, you got Game of Logging? Who'd you do it through? And I was like, Ranger School? Cool. Let's go rig this tree with a bunch of ropes and cut out of a bucket. And I'm like, I didn't do any of that. So there's kind of that weird, like, largely, at least in the U.S. and abroad, the ISA covers a lot of that.
Yeah.
You can get certified through them, but that doesn't mean that you can't still cut without that certification.
Right.
So the ISA is just the International Society of Arborists.
So what your employee is getting certified is through the state saying, okay, you're safe enough to be able to cut. Yep. And there's been some additional stuff since you guys had a death within your state working. So now there's always, whenever there's an accident or a negligent.
It all trickles down to.
Yeah. Yeah. So he's getting that training and you're trying to get him some experience.
Right.
And we've got plenty of bucking to do. Mm-hmm. And what you really need to teach him about is fire. How to drag brush and burn it.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. We were just talking about that because we got three trees to remove at his place. Mm-hmm. One is a spruce that died over the winter. It had kind of been dying back. In fact, Brad was like, well, it still had some life in it. And I looked up and I was like, I'm not seeing a single green needle on that
yeah,
tree.
Yeah, and there should always be a green needle on it.
Yeah, I was like, I think that's dead. But they're trying to figure out, well, what are we going to do with all this wood?
That's not the one you're climbing, right?
No. Okay. No. I thought about, because it's close enough to the other one, the live one, that I could set a line in and swing over and climb up. So that way I don't have to worry about being restricted there.
Yep.
But there's no need is the reality.
Right.
You know, that would have been an experience thing for me, but it's not. It's really not necessary.
Yeah.
No, the one I'm climbing is a maple. So there's two hardwoods, and that's, I'm only climbing a little bit, just enough to cut off a couple of the lead branches. So we don't put big old holes in their lawn, and which is really, as much as it seems ridiculous to climb up, and it's nice to not have big holes dropped in your lawn. And then the other thing is, when I go up, I'll just toss a rope in it and we'll pull it over. So we don't have to worry about that either.
Yep.
So.
And as your dad, I would probably be worried about you, but we're recording this on Thursday night, and I'm getting on a plane on Friday to go to Africa, to Senegal, with your younger sister, Rachel. And so, I'm not going to probably worry too much about you and the trees. I'll be worrying about me hitting something hard in an airplane.
Yeah. Well, it's funny. I was... Brad, mm-hmm. the person, he didn't want us to do it while it was just his wife home, because she stays at home. He wanted to make sure that he was there in case something happened. He didn't want her to be the one dealing with it, because I honestly don't want her to be the one dealing with it. I don't, but I have full faith that there won't be any issues.
Right. Yeah.
So that's what we try for.
Yeah. We don't want issues.
Yeah. Non-issues is what we call them.
And usually I have issues, and then I call you to get me out of them.
The issues. Yeah,
we had a nice break in the weather this week. I think it was Monday. Today's Thursday. I've lost my days. It might have been Tuesday morning, but I skidded out probably, I don't know, 10 or 12 logs, and in that area that we've been cutting. And I just didn't have the time to start stacking brush and burning. Mm. But it's been nice to be able to have it dry up enough to be able to start pulling logs. That's huge.
Yeah. Yeah. And I intend this, a little side note, adding to the raised beds. Mm. And I'm going to use logs for that. And depending on the size, I might stack. I was thinking about stacking.
Yeah.
I've seen a couple of different posts on it just because it's easy. We've already got the logs. I might as well just cut them to size. And and then it's just a matter of filling them up with dirt and manure and everything else.
Well, feel free to get the... And I know Ryan from Crosswinds and Crosshairs needs... You know, smaller stuff
for his sap,
you know, and I don't know if he's even got a saw to cut them up, but I was going to bring them out in, like, you know, bucket lengths, you know, because that's usually I just throw those on the burn pile, but he wants to.
Yeah. There's some of those that I was considering saving just for my smoker.
Mm-hmm.
And what I need to do is talk to FJ and see if he needs anything for the pig roast.
Yeah. I know he was looking for hickory, maybe.
Hickory.
I told him he had a bin full of that stuff, but
sugar maple's fine. My bin might be consumed for a pig roast.
Yeah.
I'm used to smoking like a couple racks of ribs at a time, not a whole. Yeah.
Well, and I chased a chipmunk out of it today. It's been living in the sugar shack.
Well, you know, we're trying to be environmentally conscientious, give them homes. If they're cold, you're cold, bring them in.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, Uncle Dave was down, and we mentioned it in the podcast last week that he shot a woodchuck. And we left it on the spillway from the pond.
Mm-hmm.
It was gone the next day.
Oh, I believe it.
I have no, it, you know, whether
a it was bald probably eagle another woodchuck.
He's gone.
That sounds like a start to a bad sci-fi. Cannibal woodchucks.
Speaking of bad sci-fi, if you get a chance to watch Llamageddon.
This isn't sponsored.
It's probably better to watch it with the sound off. But, you know, anytime you can get a llama that comes from outer space and shoots lasers out of its eyes.
I think the llama's name was Larry. He's got an Instagram page.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah, no. Yeah, I found it. Because I wasn't there for when you were watching it, and you sent a text. I was like, what the heck is he watching? So I pulled it up, and I was curious if there were, like, any actual legitimate actors in it. And there's not, but he's, like, up at the top. It's, like, Larry the Lobster, or Larry the Lobster, wow. Larry the Llama. And you can click on him and find his Instagram page, and they got posts about him. And,
it was so bad. Don't anybody watch that. It was so bad. Well, so this week I posted a story on our Instagram page that's actually gotten some traction. So we did a cut. I don't know, when did we do the West Cut? 2 years ago? I mean, it was completed 2 years ago.
It was probably completed 2 years ago. We started 3 years.
Because some of it was part of the hickory harvest we did. And then there's a I don't know, maybe 50 yards of wooded along the a wooded trail that comes to our food plot, which then on the other side of the food plot are these strip cuts the bedding, that we've been doing. And that trail is just worn out. I mean, it is, and it might be the same two deer that run it every day.
Yeah. Well, and it's only like 30 feet, 40 feet of woods between like our the far end of our, our
it's yard not much. And
the.
But on the post, I talked about, you know, the placement of it, like it's one thing to improve habitat.
Yeah.
That's great for the wildlife, but you got to take the next step that as hunters, we need to know, we need to be able to pattern those deer to figure out where they're going to be, where they're going to travel so that we can harvest those animals, deer, turkey, whatever it is. And it has taken us 6 years of habitat management to finally get to a place where we are. Like, I feel like the deer largely are going where we want them to go. Yeah. Some of that was the blowdown cut that we did in the center of the woods, which pushed them to the outside edges, which is where they want to be anyway,
when
the ag fields are there. And part of it was creating bedding in close proximity of food plots. Food plots for us are not a huge win.
Yeah.
Because we always have corn or alfalfa or triticale or some type of rye.
There's always food around somewhere. Right.
And so when we put in our food plots, we try and put in, we think of a couple things. One, late season food. And so that has always been brassicas, which has not been largely successful. And then the second thing we think about with that is spring green up. What's going to green up first to help them as they're lactating, as they're putting antlers on, as they're dropping deer? And that's usually clover. So we've put those in, and the deer have been hitting it. And additionally, since we've done this cut, you know, we're putting a lot of browse on the ground.
Yeah.
There's a lot of buds.
Oh, yeah.
And, I mean, I was running that tractor back and forth all day Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
There's new tracks in that already. And it's been 24 hours, 36 hours.
Mm-hmm.
There's new tracks, even right here in the yard.
Yeah, well, and it's even just right where we were dropping the trees. We came back the next day, and there were just tracks all around there where they were eating the buds from the trees that we had dropped.
Yep. It's astounding how they find it and how quickly they devour it, utilize it.
Yeah.
You and Levi were, when you were training him, you were dropping some cottonwood.
Mm-hmm.
What do you know about cottonwood trees?
That you don't like them.
That's for sure.
I know their branches can be pretty brittle when you're climbing.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
So cottonwood is not a soft, not a good,
yeah.
No, it's a soft tree.
It's not quality for lumber, really anything. Like, right. There's nothing that anybody says, oh, I want a cottonwood for, other than like shade, or like if you've got moisture problems in your yard, or like a pond or something. You can plant them to kind of soak up some of that. But other than that, they're really not good for anything.
So I was listening to John Teeter's podcast this week from Whitetail Properties. And John, I love him. He's pretty intelligent to the point where I struggle to follow him sometimes. But he was interviewing Travis Harmon, who we're going to have on next week from Creative Habitat. Mm. And Travis was talking about this new property that he got, and they had a lot of cottonwood on there. But it sounds like where he's at in Indiana, the cottonwoods are much smaller DBH, their stems. And he said at those smaller sizes, it's, you know, they're okay. But once they get bigger, you know, that kind of thing. Yeah. Well, I'm thinking, we have a 36-inch DBH cottonwood. And that, I mean, yeah, that's our largest, but we've got some cottonwoods that are
consistently 20, 24.
Yeah, that are just, so our yard looks like a snowstorm in end of May,
beginning of June. It's cool to light on fire, though, if you watch it cross.
And it's such a worthless tree to me. You know, I'm sure there's got to be a reason God created them, but I don't know what it is.
The raccoons like to sit in them.
That's true.
I like to climb them because there's a lot of easily accessible branches, and the bark's not terrible for my spurs.
And you wonder, would turkey roost in them?
I think probably. I don't feel like... Yeah, we definitely have some that could probably handle it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think that they're like turkey aren't attracted. Like turkey, when I think turkey, I think oak trees because they have food and mast. Plus, it can be pretty large with larger branches.
Or hickory.
Or hickory. I mean,
we've got a decent amount of hickory. But that's, I'm like, okay, it's okay, but we don't want to settle for okay.
Right.
We want the best. Know, okay, better, best. We want to be working towards best.
Yeah.
And so, you know, whether that's girdle and spray or drop them, and we've been dropping a lot over in this new section that we've been cutting.
Right.
I'm not even bothering to haul them out to burn them.
No.
There's just...
Well, and that's a nicer thing about them is that they are a softer wood where they'll break down a lot faster than, you know, if you have a hickory and oak that might lay there for years, you know, and these are more similar to a pine where it'll rot away and fall apart pretty quickly, pretty easily.
Yeah. Yep.
Unless you have fire that burns them up anyway, in which case they'll once they dry out, they're real light. They're going to go up. Yeah. I mean, if we had a couple of years when we were burning them inside even, and it was fast.
And basswood's the same
empty.
Way. Basswood just burns right up. And it burns hot for about 10 minutes.
And then it's done. Like, and then you got to put another log on the fire.
Right, right. Do you, the SOP, standard operation or standard
operating procedure,
when we drop a tree, if we're not going to harvest it and pull it out, we want it to be right to the ground.
Flush to the ground as best you can. Yeah, the log itself flush to the ground, as many branches as you can. Sometimes what will happen is people will go through and they'll cut all the branches off the log, and then they'll just kind of, as long as they're disattached, it's fine. As best I can, you end up with branches tangled up in other things, and I'll toss them and kind of spread them out a little bit if I can, and... because they degrade faster, they break down, and they're less of a visible obstruction. If you're trying to look through the woods and you've got all this pile, it just doesn't look as good, especially, you know, working in parks and working in areas like that. Nobody wants to see that necessarily. And so breaking it down is kind of is our go-to. And a lot of times what I'll do is I'll separate the butt, you know, those lower couple of feet. That way if we want to take them out, we can. We have that option. Or if they're over trails, we'll break them off and separate them like that. But
so that's in a park setting, like you work for the state, it's a park setting.
A lot of times we'll leave as much as we can in parks, we leave, partly because as far as we're concerned, that's habitat. You know, you have stuff living in that. We'll do that with spurs too. If there's a dead tree and it's not near something that's going to, it's going to fall on and break it, we'll leave it as much as we can. We like to leave that kind of thing because we recognize that that is habitat. That is things that animals use. And so when we can, we do that. And then a lot of times, if I can, I'm going to drop a tree into the woods rather than drop it into, you know, a lawn that I have to then chip
a lot less cleanup.
That's my mind. That's the reality of it, is it means I don't have to clean it up. But if I'm talking to the public, I do it because that way I'm creating habitat for the other species, ground species and squirrels. And yes, so that's why
it's all about how you feel.
It's all about how it looks to the public eye. That's what it is.
But what we have found is the more gnarly it looks, the more it holds deer.
Yeah, deer like that kind of, like, yeah. Which I did consider that as we were breaking some of those down, is that really the deer don't mind little bit of that cover.
Nope.
Especially since all those were real budded out and cottonwood had big buds.
Yeah.
I don't know if they're anything particular that deer like, but I know they're large buds.
I can tell you that there were tracks in and out of there.
I believe
out of the tops.
So. And I know that area, I mean, that's right in line with kind of what we were doing, where we're steering deer with those trees.
Yeah.
And that's something not everybody, I don't think people consider that all the time. I've seen some videos where people are talking about, you know, we're going to clear this, we're going to drop this and open it up and get ground cover, and that's great. But if you're not removing them and you're going to leave them, you can use that to your advantage. You can drop trees directionally if, you know, based on level of experience and equipment and what you have. But if you can kind of control where those trees are dropping in such a way that, okay, we're going to run them all parallel, and they're not going to take up much space lengthwise, but widthwise, you know, we know that they can't go more than the 10 feet on either side of them.
Right.
You know, that kind of thing. You can use that to your advantage and control movement and patterns like that.
And not to beat a dead horse, but I would say doing it that way is far more advantageous than hinge cutting.
Yeah.
I'm so sick and tired of seeing hinge cutting, and I know I'm beating the dead horse, but I feel like it's such a lazy way of doing it, because you're going to have to come back 2-3 years from
now. That's my biggest issue with it is, and I get it. I mean, you can see arguments where if you do it right, it'll last a couple, you'll see sprouts coming up off, but it's not, it's not the most natural way, you know, like that's, it doesn't, and B, especially if you do it wrong, and really, even if you do it right, it's not going to last long term. Right. You're either going to have to go through and cut off all those 3-foot stubs that you got coming up out of the ground and logs at an angle and deal with all that. Or you're going to leave them and it's going to be a mess and it's just going to not.
And you've now opened up the tree to blight damage, to anything else that might cause to, even the presence of water.
The expectation that is going to last and live and produce long term is ridiculous. It's just not realistic. It's the reality. And I'd much rather put my efforts, if I'm going to put as much effort as, you know, cutting and doing that kind of thing, I'm going to do something that I know is going to last long term. It's clear cut and add shrubs, you know, wildflowers, do anything like that, that, you know, might not show the greatest results year one or year two.
Right, exactly.
But by the third or fourth year, you're getting far better results ultimately than what you might have seen in the first year or two of
hinge cutting. Anything worth doing is worth doing right.
Right.
So, and I used to say, well, I can see some specific areas where hinge cutting could be beneficial. I am now probably in the camp where if you're doing hinge cutting, I think you're just being lazy. You're getting in, you're making your money off of a client, and you're moving out.
And I don't know how much of it's necessarily lazy. I think sometimes there's a lack of knowledge.
Yeah.
I think sometimes you see that a lot in some of these bigger, you know, habitat managers, because it's that quick result. It's, hey, we'll do this for you and you're gonna see deer. Look at how many more deer we see year one. And that's great, but the reality is, I think there's a lack of education there, because,
and some of it is you're putting buds on the ground; those buds are gone.
Yeah,
you know, so great, you're seeing an increase year one, but after that,
no. And by the time deer season starts, the buds are gone.
Right. and so maybe you're offering some directional movement, right? So you're causing them to use a specific north-south trail because yep. you've cut them east and west. Some of it is, okay, we're causing, get down to 3 feet and look what the cover is. Mm. So we're providing cover is kind of, but the trade-off is I'm watching guys on YouTube videos and Instagram, they're cutting trees at 4 or 5 feet high mm-hmm. and it's a forced barber chair, yep. which is
dangerous
to begin with. And especially at that height, and you're not encouraging any of the basal layer growth. And, oh, by the way, that tree's going to be dead in 3 years.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
How did we get on to my pet peeve?
Because it's always on your mind. You're angry about it. I will steer the topic away. That directional that we were talking about is easy for us when, you know, our property is longer than it is wide. You know, yeah. it's more of a strip. It's I think when you get to, if you have a square property that's 200 acres, it's a little bit harder to say, okay, we're going to steer them and keep them to the edges of this. Sure. I think it's a lot more realistic to say, okay, we have a food plot here, or we have a pocket here that we know is bedding, yep. and say, we're going to control where this trail is. We're going to funnel them. You know, we're going to drop a couple of trees in such a way that it funnels them, that they can still freely get into that bedding, but there's a limited area that they can, you know, sure. consistently do it. That way, come season, you can have your stand set up yeah. there where you know that they're going to come in within range, especially when it comes down to bow season.
Yeah.
And you can do the same with food plots and anything that you know that they're going into and they're attracting. You can do the exact same thing.
Yeah. And there's SOPs that we follow yeah. with each of those. Food plot. Okay, so you've got this clearing. Feather those edges.
Yep.
You know, do a TSI thinning in there. Allow some of the natural shrubs to come up to provide, you know, additional cover so that a deer can take two hops out of your bedding or yeah. out of your food plot, rather, into a feathered area. Mm-hmm. I think rather than doing a whole lot of hinge cutting, you can do, you know, a tornado type cut.
Yeah. Just a thinning, drop some trees and create disturbance,
yep,
you know?
Yep. And those kinds of things, you can achieve, the same kind of outcome, trying to get, you know, the idea is you want the deer to move in a pattern that you can,
right, predictable.
Can predict, and you can do that without having to do a whole lot of hinge cutting.
Well, and here's the other thing that, you know, you might not necessarily want to cut in certain areas, or maybe you're not ready to do cutting, or you don't have the experience, that kind of thing. But that doesn't mean you can't still track movement and kind of, mm-hmm. and that's where, you know, going out and being present in your woods. I love the idea of having an undisturbed woods, and you know, the deer feel totally natural until deer season, when I sneak in from, you know, taking a mile out of the way course just to get into my stand 5 feet. Yeah, and I love that, but I really think being in the woods is the biggest advantage that you can have, because you know, I know exactly the route that these deer are taking. Yeah. You know, the buck that I took, the larger one on my birthday a couple of years ago, yep. I had never seen that deer before, but I knew consistently that the deer ran that edge, that same similar pattern, and you can learn to track that. You can see yep. time after time after time, okay, we've got deer, they might not be taking the same trail, but they're moving the same similar, right. or time frames. Okay, this time of year, in the early season, they're running this trail, and you set your stand up for September, when you're watching them, or August, when you're watching them and they're consistently following this trail, and November hits or colder winter hits or the corn gets cut and all of a sudden they change and you're not prepared for that.
Yeah.
It throws you. So yeah. if you track year to year and you know that these deer are going this way and they're following this consistent pattern year by year, during season, when you know, oh, okay, these deer are not near my stand, they're going that way because the corn's cut. note that down and think about that. And this is the time of year to be making those changes. And that's a huge thing that, and it gets me all the time where it's like, I see tracks here. I got to put up a stand here.
Yeah.
And then I don't think about when I was sitting in my stand last year and I put my stand there and there wasn't a single deer that walked by it because the corn was cut.
And a lot of it, I mean, wind plays a huge factor in that. So our property runs east and west. And if the wind is coming out of the south, I know to hunt the north side.
Right.
Because the deer always walk that north side. Yep. If the wind is coming out of the north, I hunt the south side because mm-hmm. the wind is always, you know, it pushes them for, I'm sure there's a safety reason, right?
Like yeah.
Okay, if the wind's coming out of the north, I'm going to walk the south side of the woods because they feel right. more protected. Their scent isn't blowing all the way across the woods. But I have watched that. I have marked that time and time yep. again. It's a predictability.
Well, and that is something that there's apps for that. I guess Quiver, I don't know if that's still up and running. What's the one that we've been using?
Trophy tracks.
You know, apps like that, or even just a notebook that you keep while you're hunting and during season to yep. be tracking that and looking back at that as you're setting up your stands. And that's the kind of thing that we preach about a lot during season of, you know, track your sightings, track what you're seeing, even the little things. You know, yeah. I might have a couple of yearling bucks or yearling does or whatever that come through. I'm going to track those just the same, even though they might not be that significant at the time.
Yep.
Come next season, I'm going to wish I remembered where those deer were coming out of.
Right.
You know, this time of year when we're kind of thinking about, okay, we're going to take this stand out. Man. This time of year, this stand needs to move. We gotta take this stand down. Every time I sit in it, the deer see me. All right, well, let's take it down. Well, where is it going?
Oh.
It ends up in a tree right next to where we had it.
Right. I don't know. We got 50 acres and about 25 stands.
You can zip line from tree to tree if you want.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, it's tough. I think managing small properties like ours at 50 acres, there are unique obstacles that come with that.
Mm.
There's also unique opportunities.
Yeah.
And, you know, thinking through those, becoming observant, you know, reacting through observation
I saw you write that down.
Yeah, that's a quote from Travis Harmon, who you're going to hear from next week. Reacting through observation.
Yeah.
I think that makes a lot of sense. You know, what are you seeing, and how do you respond to what you're seeing? Mm.
And that'll change property to property. I mean, yep. We can say, do this, and for whatever reason, your property, your deer just might not react the same way. That's the reality. And that's the hardest part, I think, about this line of work and mm-hmm. this kind of thing is that there are a lot of variables that you're trying to play off of. And sometimes it's just using that scientific method of try this. Okay, that didn't work. Well, we're going to try that. Okay, that worked. Let's try it again and see, you know, if there was something that actually caused it, or maybe it was something else that we didn't consider that was creating that change, you know.
And you know, I think people forget that individual deer have individual personalities.
Yeah.
You know, that 8.5-year-old doe that I shot last year, her personality was such, she just always moved the front end of the property.
Yeah.
And she didn't have fawns with her. She mm-hmm. just, that was her personality. But then you see different personalities with other deer. You know, that doe that had 3 fawns with her this year, she would always come from the north and move to the south and then follow the south mm-hmm. line back. Like, they just yep. have different yep. personalities.
Well, that young four that I saw mm-hmm. 60% of my hunts, he was out early. Yep. Every hunt. I saw him at 2 in the afternoon a couple of times. Like he was never moving with, it was weird. He never was moving with other deer. Whenever I saw him, he was solo. He was doing his own thing and it was earlier than I was expecting. It wasn't even that, you know, that like just before dusk witching hour that you expect to see deer. It's like, I'm pulling out my granola bar and I'm like standing up a little bit and then he comes walking in. It's like, what are you doing, man?
Yeah, we were trying to pattern an animal, a species that in some ways you're like, you can't pattern this thing. It's a beast of its own.
Well, and I think about it, I mean, I joke with my coworkers about this. I use Google Maps and it tries to pattern me. So I'll get a notification at, you know, when I get in my truck at 6:45 or whatever time I get in my truck saying, here's, you know, 17 minutes to so-and-so location where I work. And it says, take this and there's low traffic. And I was like, I've been taking the same route for the last thing. Thanks. But, you know, and then I'll show up to work and 10 minutes into work, I'll get a notification saying, hey, you just got in your vehicle. Here's, you know, the directions to Darien Lake State Park where you've been working for the last week. So I'm like, I'm not going there. I'm going to the North Side of Letchworth. I'm done with that job, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And it tries to pattern this, and very similar to us, I think deer work very similarly, is we're trying to track this. Okay, they did this 3 weeks in a row, and then all of a sudden something changed. A new plant is popping up. You know, there was a plant that was in bloom and fruiting at this point, and now it's not. And for whatever reason, we think it's this grand scheme.
Right.
And all it is for the deer is, oh, that berry's blooming over there. I'm going to go eat some of those. There are those little things that I don't think we always consider.
And I think, you know, Steve Bartilla says the same thing. He's like, deer don't know where they're going. Like they don't get up and go, oh, I'm heading to Walmart.
I got work today.
I'm heading over to this place. Like they go and they're moved by their noses and their stomachs, basically.
And then there might be a day that you're tracking and all of a sudden that deer's not there. Well, I've tracked it for the last 3 days. And then the next day, it's there again. So what was that one day? What happened in that one day, you know, of a week of 6 days that it did the exact same thing? And on the Wednesday, it didn't. It never showed, or it came from the opposite direction.
Or it was a guy and his son that shot at it 3 times and pushed it to you.
It could have been a coyote that hopped out. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It could be anything. Or it could just be, you know, a buck going on an excursion because it's that time of year and he's just going to there's a lot of those little things that those intricacies that as much as it makes it harder to try and track deer, I think that's why it's such an engaging sport and an engaging thing to take part of, is because you can't just predict it.
And it's why it's hunting and not farming.
Right. That's what I love. That's what I think what most hunters love about it is it's that unpredictability of, as much as I can say, I've seen this deer here consistently and takes this trail, I can set up on that trail, you're never going to be able to guarantee that deer is going to take that same path for the same day.
Right.
Because stuff changes. Something happens. It catches a wind of something else, or a coyote bumps it somewhere else. You know, there's all those curious little things, and trying to track it and trying to understand it all is really what makes it such an enjoyable thing.
Yeah, I agree.
You know,
and sometimes the thing that the change, or the, you know, the glitch in their
in the matrix
is us.
Yeah,
like, oh, the deer didn't go by today because they caught wind of you, or they caught wind of your trail going in, or you know, there's so many layers to it.
It's funny you say that, because I don't think we always consider. We always talk about. I know this season in particular, we said, man, September to October, we were seeing deer all the time, and they're at the same time, and then it felt like they vanished.
Yeah.
Well, they vanished about a month into us sitting and watching them for a month. There were weeks on end and like tracking them. We're like, it's no wonder they vanished. We're on them, and they I think they know that. Yeah. I think there is a little bit of that we don't, you know, we think that there's something that's going on with them, and it could just be the fact that we're there.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure that plays a huge factor in it. When we're on a small acreage like we are.
Easy to overhunt.
Very easy to overhunt. And I think we did a better job last year than we have in the past. Mm-hmm. But it's also like there's a emotional connection to harvesting a
on
deer
your
from your property. And we have permission from three other locations locally, but we don't know the property as well.
Yeah.
And we're kind of like, boy, we've put all this work into our property.
Yeah.
You know, it makes it difficult. Mm-hmm. And so there's days where I think I'd rather sit on my property and think about the things that I want to do to improve it.
Yeah.
And not see a single deer, then go to somebody else's property and see a parade
right.
of, you know, doe.
Or, you know, take a 2.5, 3.5 year old 6 point or 8 point that's, you know, nothing special, but I know that I did the work that got him staying here and I was able to track his patterns. Then go to somebody else's and take a Boone and Crockett that was pure luck. Just you know, I just happened to sit in the right spot at the right time and never seen this deer before. You know, there's no relationship. Like that 8.5-year-old doe that you took was, you know, whether or not an 8.5-year-old doe is one that you really want to eat and, you know, enjoy. But the reality is we've been tracking her for 8.5 years. And that's a cool thing.
That's
a cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's hard, right? I mean, that's part of why I struggle to go out of state hunting too.
Yeah.
I mean, we've had multiple opportunities to go to Illinois to my cousins. Mm-hmm. We've got invites to go to Wyoming, and I'm like, oh, that'd be cool. We got to go out and hunt. And then it comes down to, do I really want to leave during New York deer season?
Right. That and mom telling you no.
Yeah, that and mom telling me. But I mean, even if mom didn't, I really struggle with. I mean, I missed opening day of gun season this year here because of a funeral, and I'm like, that stinks.
Yeah,
you know, I haven't missed an opening day in 30 plus years, and I don't know. You get tied to the land a little bit.
Yep.
So yeah. Boy, we didn't have a topic for tonight, but here we are.
Well, that's what I said. I was like, we always find something to talk about. I got ADHD. I'll ramble. I can go about with just about whatever.
Yeah. Well, Rachel and I are leaving tomorrow. So tomorrow is Friday, the end of April, and we are heading out to back to Senegal. We go. Mm-hmm. I go just about at least once a year, usually twice. And I'm supposed to go again in August or October, somewhere's in there. And everybody always asks, oh, are you going hunting? Are you hunting in Africa? Like, no, we are literally on the edge of the Sahara Desert.
All that's out there are goat lions.
Yeah, and some snakes maybe. And, you know, anything else that might be around.
Scorpions.
Is in the sanctuary, in the safari sanctuary.
Yeah. Yeah, the giraffes.
Yeah, but it was 123 this week.
Man.
And Chess, so we land in Dakar. We'll spend most of our time in Chess. Chess wasn't bad. It was like 98 this week.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
I thought 70 degrees that we're looking at next week was hot.
but we'll be, so we'll be visiting multiple villages, and then the last 3 days will be in our village, which will be
nice
fun. We're doing a vet clinic.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Done that.
Yeah. So they have two vets that are coming, veterinarians that to help treat cows, sheep, goats. For 95% of the country's Muslim, they have a lot of pigs.
Yeah,
which is bizarre. So, Rachel and I will be working with the vet clinic, and you know, so it'll be different. We did a health clinic last year.
Yeah. Right?
So we bring them in, the clients or the patient, and we walk them through the whole. I don't know how that translates with the animals.
Yeah, the animals, the cows, I don't know. In my experience, the animals all seem to know where they're doing. You know, that time of day, they all show up to the watering well in order of size. You know, it goes cows, then the donkeys, goats, sheep.
Yeah, and the chickens get whatever's left.
Yeah, whatever scraps are still kicking around.
Yeah.
And,
yep.
Yeah, so it'll be cool.
It's been you know, for our family, it's been 14, 15 years, more than that, of involvement with this community, and they have adopted us. And, so this week has just been you know, oh, we need to get this, we need to get that. I'm buying guitar strings. I'm ordering
books and French.
And, oh, they need a hatchet. You know, and I'm like, so we're taking five suitcases and two carry-on bags, which are Rachel and I's
clothes.
That's
all your clothes is a carry-on.
But it's such a fascinating experience to me. They really have become family. And,
yeah.
So this will air while I'm in Senegal. And then after that, we have Travis Harmon from Creative Habitat will be on. Mm-hmm.
Talking about the bees.
And I think Rachel and I will probably do a follow-up from the trip after that. Mm-hmm. She hasn't been on in a while. And then we'll be into, I don't know what, kayaking, fishing.
Yeah, the outdoors.
Yeah, more adventures.
Mm-hmm.
The Beards Creek Adventures is attending a wedding this summer, or this, mm-hmm. well, fall really, I guess, for Emily.
Yeah.
September 7th.
Got weddings.
Yep. So we got a whole bunch of stuff coming up. We've got some other guests that we're working on lining up, and excited about that. And it's hard to believe when you think about the seasons, and deer season for us starts October 1st. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's like six months away. We're at the end of April.
Yeah, we're at the post preseason.
Yeah, post preseason.
I think we're finally. We're at the end of the pre season. I don't know if we're quite to pre post season.
If I were home this week, I'd be tilling the food plots because it's just about dry enough. But
yeah,
you know,
unless it rains or we get frost like we did this morning.
Yeah, and we're supposed to get tomorrow morning too. It's supposed to be really cold. But our farmers around here are starting to get planted.
Yeah, yeah. I've seen a couple that are planting. A lot of them are spraying manure or injecting. Yeah. And
which is kind of late for planting. Planting should have probably already happened normally. But
yeah, I don't know. I'm not a farmer.
No, but I've watched enough.
You track it. Yeah, you're tracking them. They're predictable.
Yeah, they're predictable. you need the ground to be 60 degrees or above usually, and then they'll plant. Sometimes they'll sneak it in earlier than that, but... For as mild as our winter has been, to not be planning until
first of
May.
Yeah.
It's tough. It's odd. But All right. Well,
I suppose.
I suppose. All right, folks. God bless. Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next week.
Yeah.